If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Christian Coates Ulrichsen joins us now, fellow for the Middle East at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, to talk about Iran and the war in the Middle East. And, oh, man, my goodness, there are more players in this, and I don't even know how to even go about presenting this. Good morning, Christian. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for taking the time with us. Let's talk about, I guess, the Houthis first. And what they're doing? Tell me about the latest with that and the Saudi oil and workarounds with the Strait of Hormuz. It's complicated, so I'm going to leave it up to you to tell us the story.
Well, since the war began in February, the impact of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz has been mitigated because the Saudis were able to redirect 5 million barrels of oil to the west coast of Saudi Arabia, to the Red Sea. And that meant the impact of the blockage on energy markets was substantially lessened. But since July, the Houthis in Yemen have been once again bombarding ships in the Red Sea, as they were doing between 2023 and 2025. And that has led to a sharp downturn in the number of ships going through the Bab al-Mandab, which is the southern point of the Red Sea that connects to the Indian Ocean. And a lot of the Saudi oil goes to Asian markets, which means they're going to have to divert up through the Suez Canal, through the Mediterranean, around the coast of Africa. So they're adding significant delays of time and money to their journeys. And so if we now see a second blockage effectively, then the workaround to the Strait of Hormuz, which was put in place in February, March, will become vulnerable to further disruption. So if the fighting or the conflict in Iran escalates, we could see a much sharper impact on energy markets next time than we did in the spring.
You know, I took some notes here, and I got U.S., Iran in one circle, right? Then in the other circle, I got Yemen, the Houthis, and the Saudis. So explain what's going on in Yemen with the Houthi rebels and also what Saudi Arabia's response could be to this.
Mm. So the Houthis are a non-state group. They seized power in Yemen in 2014. They have controlled much of central and northern Yemen since then. In 2015, the Saudis, together with other Arab states, launched a military intervention to try to push the Houthis back. The Saudis got dragged in very quickly to a war they couldn't win, which since 2022 has been in a rough ceasefire.
Wait, say that part again, please, about the Saudis got what?
They got sucked into a conflict in 2015 where they intervened militarily, which they couldn't really win. They couldn't force the Houthis back. There was a conflict that was sucking in huge amounts of Saudi resources militarily. And since 2022, there was a fragile truce that really was maintained until very recently.
Tell me, if I can interrupt for 1 second, please, tell me why they couldn't win the war. Why couldn't they win?
Because they were trying to do so with air power alone, and they didn't have people on the ground. And the Houthis were very firmly entrenched on the ground in the areas they controlled in Yemen. they were extremely effective in maintaining control, deepening control, taxing the local population, and also receiving support from Iran as well, which meant they could also fire missiles and drones against Saudi infrastructure, Saudi cities, on a regular basis between 2015 and 2022. So the limits of Saudi power, the limits of their ability to enforce a change by air power alone, as we're seeing now with the U.S. and Iran, was much more limited than they had expected. So we've had this fragile truce, and in July the Houthis announced they're going to break that truce. They've now been significantly increasing their attacks both on Saudi Arabia but also on other parts of Yemen they don't control, so areas where there hadn't been any fighting for 4 years have now seen a significant increase in fighting over the last month or so. So if Yemen becomes another active flashpoint, that would be extremely concerning for the Saudis, just because it's on their southern border. It really would put in jeopardy the Saudi oil exports that we have seen continuing despite the disruption with Iran and Hormuz. And so I think the last thing the Saudis want is for Yemen to once again become a huge challenge on their southern border.
How can they prevent that from happening?
Well, there's dialogue between the Saudis and the Houthis, mediated by Oman. There's been dialogue since 2022. The Saudis do not want to get drawn back into the war in Yemen because they saw what happened last time from 2015 to 2022. So I suspect there's probably quite a robust ongoing dialogue between the Saudis and the Houthis. But if the Houthis decide to go all out for whatever reason, there's probably not that much Saudis can do, except obviously they have probably a much stronger anti-missile, anti-drone air defense system now as a result of what has happened over the last 6 months. So they can probably shoot down, intercept most of the Houthi missiles and drones. And I mean, there won't be an invasion, a grand invasion of Saudi Arabia or anything like that. So the Saudis may be hoping that whatever deterrence they have is in air defense, which can obviously intercept most of the incoming missiles and drones.
And you mentioned the dialogue. What are the Houthis looking for?
They're looking for recognition, I think, as the legitimate government of Yemen, which they're not. The internationally recognized government is Saudi-backed. They control southern parts of Yemen. The Saudis and the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, had a big falling out at the end of last year. They were the two most important players in the coalition in 2015. And the Saudis effectively kicked out the UAE from parts of southern Yemen. So the Saudis, basically, it's their problem now. It's their file. It's their responsibility. So the Houthis will want to be recognized as the governing party in Yemen, but that's not going to happen. The international community doesn't recognize it. Only the Iranians do. And especially when you now look at it in context of the situation with Iran and Iran's groups across the region, like Hezbollah and even to some extent Hamas, and the groups in Iraq, the Saudis will not want, and the U.S. will not want, for one of Iran's groups, like the Houthis, who are probably the most powerful Iranian proxy group in the Middle East right now, to be given any recognition.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I want to talk about Houthi weaponry and where they're getting that from and how long that could go on. Christian Coates Ulrichsen is our guest, fellow for the Middle East at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Complicated stuff. You got any questions, 504-260-1870. You can text them in. I'll pass them along when we come back. Right now, 721 Traffic, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Christian Coates Ulrichsen, a fellow for the Middle East at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, about the Houthis in Yemen and attacks on the Saudi workaround, and correct me if I'm saying anything wrong here, I think I got it right, with the Strait of Hormuz. So I guess the question that pops into my mind is, would the Strait of Hormuz being open consistently disempower the Houthi rebels?
I mean, it would certainly lessen the leverage they think they have, in the sense that if the Houthis think they can now effectively do to the Bab al-Mandab what Iran has done to the Strait of Hormuz, that would increase their leverage significantly. If you remember in 2025, in May, the Houthis came to an agreement with the Trump administration, which, you know, the U.S. actually tried a four-month campaign of trying to bomb the Houthis into stopping the attacks on the Red Sea and shipping. And, I mean, there had been a lot of expenditure of munitions from the U.S. side and several accidents as well. And so eventually even the Trump administration came to an agreement with the Houthis. And so you see the leverage the Houthis think they might enjoy if they think they can actually effectively close the workaround to the Strait of Hormuz. So, yeah, any sort of opening of Hormuz would lessen the Houthi leverage they think they might have.
It seems to me, to put it in simple terms, the Houthis are like a wasp that's flying around and can inflict some damage. And we're trying to eliminate that wasp with a cannon, which is not, it's a mismatch. In one way, it's a mismatch. In another way, you'll never succeed. Is that kind of what we're looking at here?
Yeah, that's probably a good, accurate description. I mean, the Houthis have been in power now for 12 years almost. They're extremely well entrenched on the ground. I mean, they're not going to be dislodged by an air campaign alone. It's going to take a lot more than that. And I don't think the Saudis or anyone else has the capacity to put boots on the ground or to train local forces to take them on. That was tried and failed after 2015. So either you have to find a way of living with the Houthis or you're going to suffer constant disruption in this way. So yes, they're going to have to figure out how to do that going forward.
And that goes back to, what do they want? And if it's recognition and they're not going to get it, do we lather, rinse, and repeat?
I mean, that seems to be what we're heading for at the moment. Of course, if you can fully interdict Houthi support, Iranian support for the Houthis, then that could weaken them. There have been reports of, obviously, Iranian weapons transfers to the Houthi in Yemen by sea, because there's no land link to Iran, obviously. But yeah, you can try to weaken the Houthis. Israel actually weakened the Houthis last year, almost exactly a year ago. The Israelis did an airstrike which took out the Houthi-appointed prime minister and most of his cabinet. And then there are further strikes in October which took out senior security and defense officials who are gathering to meet. So it shows that with intelligence, you can really do a lot of damage to the leadership. And the Houthis have been much more cautious since then, at least they were, about appearing in public, a bit like the Iranian leadership now as well. So, you know, they can be degraded. They probably can't be taken out or eliminated, but they certainly can be degraded with the right quality of intelligence and pinpoint targeting. But it's going to be a long haul, and the U.S. found in May 2025 that it's sometimes better to just come to an agreement.
It is a mess. Thank you, sir. Christian Coates Ulrichsen. We'll take a break, come back. We're going to talk about when kids commit crimes, how responsible are the parents? Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Thank you. The Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation got a big raffle coming up, and it's pretty interesting. Craig Forshag joins us now, Director of Sales for the aforementioned Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation. How you doing, Craig?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about this big raffle.
Sure thing. Well, simply put, Tommy, it is the greatest raffle in sports. We have one winner taking home over 500 game tickets to different sporting events across Southeast Louisiana. It includes Saints season tickets. It includes Pelican season tickets. It's LSU football, baseball, basketball, women's basketball, gymnastics. We have Tulane football in there. We have their baseball, basketball, and women's basketball in there. We have LSU and NO tickets. We have our two bowl games in town, the New Orleans Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, and we cap it all off with the Zurich Classic.
Wow. How do you go about getting a ticket?
Sure thing. The easiest way to get a ticket is just go on our website. The website is gnosports.com/win. Again, that's gnosports.com/win. They are $100, but we only sell 2,000 total entries. So the odds are in your favor. It's not like we have 10,000 of these raffle tickets floating around out there. You really are going to have a good shot to win this thing.
When is the drawing?
Sure thing. Our drawing is going to be Sunday, August 30th. So you have less than 2 weeks to go. Time is definitely running out. The entries are selling really fast right now. So make sure you don't get caught on the sideline and go ahead and get your entry today.
Tell me about the Sports Foundation and what does the money go to?
Absolutely, Tommy. So this is the Sports Foundation's primary fundraiser on the year. Our mission at the Sports Foundation is to attract and manage sporting events that are going to have a positive economic impact on the greater New Orleans area and on the state of Louisiana. It's getting so competitive out there when it comes to trying to attract and land these major sporting events. So when you purchase a raffle entry, not only are you giving yourself this incredible opportunity to win all these different game tickets, but you're really ensuring the Sports Foundation's success in the future as we continue to bid upon these major events.
So you can winning how many tickets?
It's over 500 game tickets when it's all said and done. So now keep in mind, it's two tickets to the Saints, two tickets to the Pelicans. So when you add all that up, it's over 500 game tickets.
Awesome. Tell me again the web address where people can go and get their tickets.
You bet. It's gnosports.com/win.
Save your vacation time. You're going to need it if you win.
That's right. You're not kidding. You're going to be busy from, the first set of tickets is obviously football season. So you're going to get Saints right off the bat. And it's going to go all the way to next April and with the Zurich Classic.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it. Craig Forshag, Director of Sales for the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation. We'll talk to Dane Cialino when we come back about what does Louisiana say about kids and parents being responsible when their kids commit crimes. We'll review when we return here on WWL. 7:47, 13 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. Good morning, Dane. How are you?
Morning, Tommy. Just fine.
Talking about today, parental responsibility when it comes to kids and committing crimes. What does the Louisiana law say, Dane? At what point is a parent responsible for a crime their kid commits?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question that we see with prosecutions across the country, but in Louisiana, a child's crime isn't automatically the parent's crime. But if a parent knowingly permits or aids or is criminally negligent in supervising a child, and the child engages in delinquent conduct, then there can be.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Criminal consequences on the parent. But it's got to have that level of culpability for the parent. There's got to be some criminal negligence or knowledge or willful conduct where the parent's allowing the minor to engage in conduct that's specified in the statute, things like violating curfew, missing school, underage drinking, having guns, those sorts of things.
I was going to ask you, criminally negligent seems like a somewhat subjective term. Does the law lay out what specifically a parent can, I guess I start to say, do or fail to do to get them in trouble as far as the kid's behavior is concerned?
Well, criminal negligence is one of those indeterminate terms in the law that we know that negligence means that a person does or fails to do something that a reasonable person would have done under similar circumstances. But in criminal cases, it's even more indeterminate and stringent in the sense that it's got to not be ordinary negligence, but a gross deviation from the standard of care of what a reasonable person would do. So I just threw out a lot of legal jargon there, but didn't really answer a lot of questions. That's the tough tough question presented to judges and juries when they have to evaluate whether someone was negligent in either a criminal or a civil case.
Back to that reasonable person kind of thing?
Back to the reasonable person standard of care. Yeah, it's something that I'm talking about it today in my contracts class. It's something that comes up in all areas of the law. It's fairly, from a legal scholarship standpoint, fairly controversial, imposing criminal liability for just mere negligence when somebody didn't know of a risk, but they should have known of the risk. But that's what happens in these child supervision cases.
Dane, what time's that class? I'm thinking about showing up and peppering you with a staccato series of questions. What do you think?
3:30. I'll see you.
Yeah. Yeah, until security escorts me out. We'll pick it up here. We go back 7:50, 10 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 7:54, 6 till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, about Louisiana. We're among the strictest states that hold parents responsible for kids' crimes. And I'm just wondering, Dane, does the fact that a parent is held responsible for the child's crime, does that lessen the culpability on the part of the child, or are we punishing everybody here?
No, children are held responsible in juvenile court for their crimes every day. So this is nothing that lessens the child's responsibility for juvenile delinquency, but the parents are held accountable for not adequately supervising.
There's no sliding scale of, okay, Junior did this, but the parents didn't do that, so therefore Junior's not really responsible for that. None of that happens at all.
Yeah, and in fact, it seems that to me anyway, that this parental criminal responsibility is almost a lightning strike. There are, you only see it really in these high-profile cases, the school shooter cases, the mass shootings. You don't really see it for ordinary juvenile delinquency, of which there is a lot of in urban centers all over the United States. You don't see a lot of efforts by prosecutors in those kind of, I hate to say it, but ordinary run-of-the-mill cases of juvenile delinquency. But if it's a high-profile case and it's investigated and the parents are found to be somewhat culpable or very culpable, then you see the prosecutions.
I remember doing an interview with somebody, and I don't remember the details of it, but it was basically they called the police on their own child because they couldn't do anything. It's like, I don't know, he's out of control. Help me out here. Would that be a mitigating factor if the parents had done something like that beforehand?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah, very much so. Any real effort by parents to get help or assistance from law enforcement or social workers is going to be looked upon by prosecutors quite favorably.
What about the civil aspect of this?
That's a lot easier. Parents are responsible for the torts committed by their children, and they can even be liable without without being negligent themselves. So we are almost strictly liable for the torts committed by our children. And there's often typically insurance coverage for that sort of thing. But that's a lot easier case to make. And you do see that those sorts of lawsuits brought more often by personal injury lawyers.
And apparently there's no floor on that. But what about the ceiling? Is it the age of majority, 17?
Yeah, I mean, once a child is 18 years old, he's responsible for his own torts, and his parents aren't going to be responsible for those. So, you know, that's why some parents have been known to emancipate their children in an effort to avoid liability for torts committed by wayward children. You don't see it often, but it's something that parents have thought about.
You read my mind because that's what I was going to ask you. What is the legal age to emancipate a child in Louisiana?
There's judicial emancipation. There's emancipation by juridical act. I'd have to research the exact ages. It's, again, it's not something you really see very often, but it is an option.
Primarily, that's to avoid liability. A parent would do that, right, for the most part?
That's right. And courts are going to be reluctant to do that because the law assumes that parents are going to be responsible for rearing their children. And by emancipating a kid, that's essentially saying the parents have given up on parental authority.
Is it in practice more of a threat than like you're talking about a lightning bolt? It seems like rather than I know they got a study that the University of Nebraska Lincoln did with police chiefs and prosecuting attorneys. They said it's not really effective, but they do bring it out, I guess, sometimes politically when it's like, we're going to charge your parents on this because they were negligent, when in fact, like you're saying, the high profile cases get the attention, but not the everyday cases of juvenile delinquency.
That's exactly right. And that's really no way to run a criminal justice system, is just to pick out the cases that are on TV for prosecution. But in this unusual area of criminal responsibility, that is something that does seem to drive some of these prosecutions.
Thank you, Dane. Appreciate your time as always. Have a great class this afternoon. Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. You need a new garage door? You can win one from WWL. Hurricane season can put every part of your home to the test, including your garage door. Well, WWL and Ace Garage Door giving you a chance to win the Hurricane Ready Garage Door Giveaway with a brand new garage door and installation worth up to $2,500. You can enter right now at WWL.com/contest for your chance to win. Get your home ready before the next storm threatens with Ace Garage Door and WWL. When we come back, we'll talk with Kenner Police Chief Keith Conley about their latest experience with urban explorers, or as it's otherwise known, trespassing. And maybe to prevent that, we'll talk with Margaret Ether, advocate recruiter for Casa Jefferson, about becoming a court-appointed special advocate. A lot coming up. Stay with us.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.